Support for NPR podcasts comes from Bose, offering Bose in-ear headphones designed for comfort and quality sound and featuring soft silicone tips in three sizes at bose.com/radio.
Bobby Fischer may be a dubious hero, but after beating Boris Spassky in 1972, he was America's first and only chess celebrity. He was on the cover of Life and Sports Illustrated. The United States Chess Federation underwent a Fischer boom. Membership doubled in 1 year, and his fame extended beyond the world of chess. Even after he vanished from public view, Bobby Fischer's mystique persisted for decades. He was the subject of several books, and he even inspired a musical.
Bangkok, Oriental setting. City don't know what city is getting. Creme de la creme of the chess world in a show with everything but you, Brenner.
The musical Chess had numerous incarnations. It began as a concept album, and this song, One Night in Bangkok, shot up the charts. In 1985, one version reached number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. The musical featured a chess rivalry between an American and a Russian, a love triangle, and a backdrop of the Cold War. One of the leads was loosely based on Fischer. In addition to playing chess, he has a weakness for international nightlife. The show eventually made its way to Broadway in 1988, not very successfully. Frank Rich's review in the New York Times offered this: "The evening has the theatrical consistency of quicksand." But Chess the Musical still has a following, with revivals popping up here and there, a musical legacy of a troubled man.
You can find a photo gallery of Bobby Fischer's life since his days as a teenage chess sensation at npr.org.
From NPR News, this is Day to Day. Well, the pressure is on Hollywood writers now that the directors have struck a deal with the studios. The writers have been on strike for more than 10 weeks now. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins us now. And Nancy, first, what kind of deal did the directors get?
Well, they're saying it's a pretty good deal. The Directors Union says it covers how they'll be paid for internet downloads of movies and TV shows. And the union says this tentative contract essentially doubles the rate now paid for downloads. The interesting thing is this is just a 3-year deal. So the studios and the directors are going to be back at the bargaining table in just a couple of years. That way, if internet streaming and downloading explodes, then the directors can negotiate a bigger slice of the pie.
Now, internet downloads and streaming, that's been the sticking point for the writers. So what has been their reaction to this deal?
They are feeling a lot of pressure from other unions like the Teamsters, who represent workers who can't work because of the writer's strike. I'm talking about truck drivers, people who haul props around, even dry cleaners. Now, the writers have pretty much followed in the director's footsteps before, and it hasn't worked out terribly well for them. There's still some resentment among the writers because back in the 1980s, they patterned their agreement on fees for home video rentals on a contract that the directors had hammered out. Now, the video market was a lot bigger than anybody expected, and one entertainment industry analyst I talked to, a guy named Hal Vogel, says the writers think they got a raw deal back then.
They feel that they gave up on a new media too early, and they were shut out of higher benefits over time. And so the union leadership basically said, we're never again. We're not going to do this again.
And Nancy, the Oscars are scheduled for the end of February. Does this have any effect on whether or not they'll go forward?
Oh, Madeline, it could. They're scheduled for February 24th. Clearly, if the writer's strike drags on, that's not good news for the Oscars. The writers are threatening to picket the Academy Awards ceremony, and many actors would boycott the event if that happened. But Hal Vogel says the writers are going to reach a deal just in the nick of time.
Chances are that something will happen before then and allow the Oscars to go on. It may not be the best Oscars that you've ever seen, but at least there will be an award ceremony if that happens.
Of course, Nancy, there was no ceremony for the Golden Globes last Sunday because of the strike. So what kind of financial fallout did that have?
Yeah, it was pretty grim. They just had a press conference. NBC lost millions of dollars because of that. Also, the studios as a whole were hurt because the Golden Globes Awards give the movies a nice little bump of publicity, and that usually pumps up sales at the box office. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Indeed. Thank you, Nancy. Nancy Marshall-Genzer of Public Radio's Daily Business Show Marketplace. Okay, no professional wrestlers at this week's movies, but Hollywood is destroying New York City again. The movie is called Cloverfield, and it's the biggest of this week's new movies. So what do the critics think? Mark Jordan Ligon is here with Slate's summary judgment.
What a potpourri of movies we have for you. A monster attacks Manhattan, Katherine Heigl's a bridesmaid who isn't knocked up, and Diane Keaton plays a janitor bank robber. Now, unfortunately, they aren't all in the same movie. Producer J.J. Abrams, who has given us everything from the TV show Lost to the upcoming Star Trek feature, presents a modern-day monster movie, Cloverfield, about a vicious creature that attacks New York City, and it's all captured on video.
There is nothing I can do for
you. I'm not asking for your help, sir. I'm just asking.
I am not letting you go out and get yourself killed. You have no idea what's out there.
I don't care what's out there.
True, it could be angry film critics. But aside from some complaints about the shaky, handheld Blair Witch-type camera work, the reviews are positive. A heart-racing experience with plenty of chills, thrills, and exhilaration, cheers USA Today. The Hollywood Reporter suggests think Godzilla Unplugged with chillingly effective results. And the San Francisco Chronicle calls Cloverfield a terrific movie filled with spectacle. And Katherine Heigl, who starred in this summer's box office hit Knocked Up, returns as the always the bridesmaid, never the bride type in the romantic comedy 27 Dresses, where she finds herself torn between James Marsden and Ed Burns.
Jane.
Yeah?
Did you put that breakfast burrito on my desk?
I just thought you might be hungry.
That's why I love you.
I love you too.
Some of the nation's critics feel like throwing rice, others want to throw rocks. Even though Variety toast, frothy, funny, and formulaic, the Washington Post snarls that 27 Dresses sags like a day-old bouquet. And for those of you curious how Annie Hall ends up pushing a broom, go see the comedy Mad Money, where Diane Keaton is forced to get a job as a janitor at the Federal Reserve Bank after her husband loses his corporate job. She teams up with Queen Latifah and Katie Holmes to pull off the perfect heist in these uncertain economic times.
Well, I think we should keep going.
That wasn't part of the deal. We were supposed to just, you know, get what we needed and get out.
I think we need more, right?
I could use more.
Don't get greedy. See, that's how people get caught.
It's the critics who feel taken by Mad Money. The Village Voice finds it also breezy and zippy and girl power peppy, but the Hollywood Reporter frowns improbable and generally unfunny, and the Chicago Tribune finds it drab. Now, some of you might remember the 1980 comedy caper How to Beat the High Cost of Living, which starred Jane Curtin, Susan St. James, and Jessica Lange as a trio of women who also try and steal money to help handle inflation. Now, in 1980, a movie ticket cost $2.50. Nowadays, at the Cineplex, $2.50 isn't even enough for a down payment on a box of Twizzlers. I should know. I just took out a loan for a bargain matinee, some Sour Patch Kids, and a large slushy.
Mark Jordan Ligon is a writer living in Los Angeles.
So me and my pal here, Matt Martinez, we have a little arrangement.
Hello.
And our arrangement is this. Matt watches American Idol.
This is true.
He gets all the information in his head. He comes in armed with that stuff.
Yes.
And I totally don't ask him about it because I don't care. But today, we're making an exception.
We are.
Because America must know.
Yeah, it has to know. You know, most people think of this as entertainment. Me, it's a responsibility. And a, yes, and I can't do it without the music. This is true. Well, you know, lots going on last night in Dallas, where the second hour or the second 2 hours of the season premiere of American Idol took place. Lots of stuff. Someone went into labor, a girl named Katie Mello, who could impersonate Shakira and Britney Spears, had a good voice. She went through. A guy named Brandon Green collected fingernails, sang Rich Girl by Hall & Oates.
How'd that go?
Choice song. I loved it. I thought it was great. He did very good. He made it through.
I think the judges are prone to blue-eyed soul.
They are. They are. There was a woman who did, I've got to use my imagination, but Gladys Knight, very nice version that she went through. One woman who went through, and it just really, really made me mad. Her name's Kaylee Dawn Hatfield, and she sang some Janis Joplin. Let's listen.
I got some Janis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
you do.
Come on, come on, come on, and didn't I make you feel like you are the only man?
Okay, okay, all right. No.
Painful.
I usually agree with the judge's decisions on who gets through. This, yeah. I'm sorry, they let her through. Simon liked her. Paula did not like her. They actually, it's just very upsetting to me. It's usually the opposite.
Everyone.
Yeah, Simon hates everybody. They just let her through for kicks when there have been people on the show who with actual talent who they have not let
through.
Can't
they always do that? It seems like that's always an option. There's so many freaks that come through.
Yeah. Well, for my money, the best one of the night was a woman named Jessica Brown. She didn't have the best voice in the world. She had the best story. She's Long Beach, Texas, two kids, little girls, former meth addict. She got addicted in college, and she sang I'll Stand By You by the Pretenders.
Oh, why you look so sad? Tears are in your eyes. Come on and come to me now. Don't be afraid to cry. Let me see you through.
So she went through next week off to San Diego for more auditions. I, of course, will be watching, and I'm going to make an effort to bring only the best parts of American Idol to this program.
Is that why we watch American Idol?
That's why we work.
Matt Martinez, our producer, our American Idol watcher. Thanks very much, Matt.
Thank you very much.